Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling, well, a really fundamental story of transformation. It's the evolution of chemistry.
That's right. How did we actually get from, say, trying to turn lead into gold?
For alchemy, yeah.
To, you know, understanding the molecular world that pretty much builds everything around us today. It's quite a journey.
It really is one of history's great intellectual adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And our guide for this deep dive is William H. Brock's fantastic book, The History of Chemistry.
And it's much more than just the timeline of discoveries. It really digs into how we as humans learn to understand matter. And then, crucially, how we learn to control it.
So our mission for you listening is to kind of pinpoint those key moments, those turning points, you know,
mm-hmm.
the big ideas, the new
mm-hmm.
tools
yeah.
that basically dragged chemistry out of, well, the mystical realm of alchemy and turned it into the precise, predictive science that underpins, well, everything. Modern medicine, industry, materials.
And Brock's central point here is really key. He argues very strongly that chemistry's growth, it was never just a straight line forward.
Not linear at all.
No, it was messy, complex, tangled web. You had breakthroughs in theory happening, but also industry demanding new things.
Practical needs.
Exactly, practical needs. Social changes happening that made it more professional. And of course, those moments of individual, well, genius.
And understanding that messy history, I think, gives us a much better grip on modern tech. You know, this historical foundation, it really dictates how we make new drugs,
yeah.
how we understand why things rust or decay.
Yeah, even global supply chains.
That's like the invisible framework for our daily lives, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And to really understand that complexity, you need an author with a pretty rare combination of skills. And that's William H. Brock. He's Professor Emeritus of History of Science at the University of Leicester.
Yeah, and what's so compelling about him, I find, is his background. He didn't just study history. He was also formally trained in chemistry.
Right, which is unusual and vital, really.
It means he's not just, you know, looking at old papers and lifting names. He gets the actual science.
Yeah.
He understands why Lavoisier needing a super accurate balance scale was so revolutionary. Not just that he had one.
Precisely. And his specialty, the Victorian era, that's chemistry's crucial adolescence, you could say.
Ah, good way to put it.
That's when it went from being maybe a hobby for a rich gentleman in his shed
right.
to a properly structured global academic field, the professionalization phase.
I think his real unique contribution is how he weaves together the technical stuff and the cultural context.
Yeah.
He doesn't just ask, what did Dalton discover?
Yeah.
He asks, why was society, why was the economy ready for an atomic theory right then.
Mm-hmm. It's about the conditions being right.
Yeah.
And he constantly reminds us that chemistry has always, always been tied to practical things. The forge, the factory, the farm.
Yeah.
You know, from trying to make better dyes way back when
to
today's complex fertilizers. Industry has always been there, pushing and funding basic chemical research.
Okay, so let's unpack the book itself. Brock manages something quite tricky. He makes this huge comprehensive history really quite accessible.
He does. You don't need a PhD in chemistry to follow along.
Not at all. You don't even really need to remember your high school periodic table that well.
The scope is pretty vast, though. He starts way back, reminding us that practical chemical knowledge existed long before theories. Think ancient Egypt, Mesopotamia.
Metallurgy, medicines.
Exactly. Advanced stuff, practical stuff. But it existed alongside, you know, quite mystical ideas about matter.
Okay.
He traces that long, slow journey towards systematic, experimental ways of working.
And the way he tells it feels really dynamic because he keeps shifting perspectives. You get the big theoretical picture, like how atomic theory took hold. But then you also get these little biographical insights into the key people and analysis of the kind of social infrastructure needed, the journals, the scientific societies.
Yeah, the things that let fragile new ideas actually survive and spread.
Crucial.
And a really fascinating theme throughout is that constant back and forth between abstract ideas and, well, getting your hands dirty. Practice.
Theory and practice feeding each other.
Absolutely. And instruments, things like better thermometers and balances, they're almost characters in the story. You simply can't have modern chemistry without them. He shows that feedback loop with industry driving innovation again and again.
And importantly, he makes sure it's not just a story about Europe. He He really highlights the global contributions, foundational work from medieval Islamic scholars, Chinese traditions, others.
It's presented as a truly cumulative, collective human effort, which it was.
Okay, let's dive into that journey then, starting with those early foundations and, maybe surprisingly, the hidden value in alchemy.
Yeah, we tend to dismiss alchemy, don't we? You know, chasing the philosopher's stone, trying to make gold. Sounds a bit silly now.
The goals were definitely mystical.
They were. But the process, Brock argues, was actually a critical step, particularly medieval Islamic scholars, people like Jabir ibn Hayyan. They really championed careful, meticulous work in the lab.
Ah, so even though they were chasing myths, they developed real techniques.
Exactly. They got obsessed with things like distillation, sublimation, filtration. They invented complex glassware, different kinds of apparatus. All to pursue these, well, impossible goals.
But in doing so.
In doing so, they built a culture of careful, repeated observation, documenting experiments, rigorous methods. That became the sort of invisible bedrock for real chemistry later on.
Okay, so that sets the stage for the big shift. Late 18th century, Antoine Lavoisier.
The chemical revolution guy.
Right. And Brock emphasizes it wasn't just that Lavoisier had a new theory. He basically redesigned the whole method of chemistry.
It was a revolution in how you even know something is true in chemistry. Lavoisier insisted on precise measurement, quantification.
A balance scale again.
The balance scale is key. And he brought in systematic nomenclature naming compounds based on what they're made of. That finally let chemists across Europe and eventually the world speak the same chemical language.
Took it out of the guesswork phase.
Completely. Yeah. Made it accountable. A strict quantitative ledger, as you said.
And a classic example is his work on combustion, right? Overthrowing phlogiston.
Perfect example. The old theory, phlogiston, said burning things release this substance, phlogiston. Lavoisier, using his super accurate balance, showed that when things burn, they actually gain weight.
Because they're combining with something from the air.
Exactly. Combining with a measurable gas, oxygen. It showed you could only really understand even familiar things like fire through careful measurement. Quantification was king.
So that quantitative groundwork laid by Lavoisier prepared the way for the next huge conceptual jump. Early 19th century, John Dalton and Adams.
Right. Lavoisier gave the method. Dalton, you could say, proposed the fundamental building blocks.
He provided the theoretical bedrock. His big insight came from looking at how substances combine. The law of definite proportions.
Which says substances always combine in fixed, simple whole number ratios. Dalton argued, well, the only way that makes sense is if matter is made of tiny, indivisible particles, atoms, which are identical for each element but different between elements.
That gave chemistry its first real predictive framework, didn't it?
It did. It meant chemists could start predicting what should happen in reactions, not just describe what they saw after the fact. A massive shift.
But even with Dalton's atoms, there was still this big barrier, this kind of dividing line in chemistry. The problem of life. Vitalism.
Oh, absolutely. Vitalism was this dominant idea that organic compounds, the chemicals made by living things, well, they needed some special, mysterious, vital force.
Something unique to life.
Yeah, and therefore you could never make them in a lab from non-living, inorganic stuff. That wall seemed totally solid, until Friedrich Wöhler.
The famous Wöhler synthesis of urea, 1828.
That's the one, the big aha moment. Urea, as you probably know, is found in urine, definitely an organic compound. Wöhler made it in a flask purely from inorganic starting materials.
Just like that.
Well, maybe not just like that, but he did it. And that single experiment basically demolished vitalism. It showed the same chemical laws governed both inorganic matter and living matter. It threw the doors wide open for studying carbon compounds systematically.
And that systematic study led pretty quickly to working out the structure of molecules, right?
Yes, structural theory. And this brings us to another great story, August Kekulé and the structure of benzene.
The snake dream.
The snake dream. Apparently, he was really struggling to figure out how benzene's 6 carbon atoms and 6 hydrogen atoms were arranged. Had a dream about snakes, one biting its own tail.
Forming a ring.
And that sparked the idea for benzene's hexagonal ring structure. Once chemists could visualize the 3D structure of molecules, not just list their atoms, that was the ultimate toolkit.
For predicting properties.
Exactly. Predicting properties, designing new molecules. This directly led to the boom in synthetic dyes, early pharmaceuticals. Late 19th century was transformed by this.
So we've gone from method to building blocks to structure. What's next on the grand scale?
Well, moving from the microstructure of single molecules to the macrostructure of the elements themselves, Dmitri Mendeleev and the periodic table.
Ah, yes. Organizing all the known elements.
But the real genius, Brock points out, wasn't just tidying up the 63 or so elements known in 1869. It was his incredible confidence in the system he created.
He left gaps.
He deliberately left gaps. And he predicted, often with amazing accuracy, the properties, atomic weight, chemical behavior of elements that hadn't even been discovered yet.
Wow.
It's maybe the ultimate proof that a powerful classification system doesn't just describe reality, it can actually predict it.
That's an incredible leap.
Which sort of brings us towards the modern era. The 20th century saw physical chemistry really emerge. Figures like Van Hoff, Arrhenius, Ostwald, they started applying hard math and physics principles.
Like thermodynamics, energy flow in reactions.
Exactly. Thermodynamics, chemical kinetics, how fast reactions happen, adding that mathematical rigor.
And then physics crashed the party even more directly with quantum mechanics.
Right. Quantum mechanics finally allowed chemists to understand why atoms bond the way they do. The intricate dance of electrons that creates molecules. It wasn't just observing bonds, it was explaining them at a fundamental level.
And this deeper theory, combined with, the huge pressures of world wars and industrial growth
Yeah, massive drivers.
that just accelerated everything. Material science, modern biochemistry, pharmaceuticals, the pace just exploded.
It's an amazing story. And looking back over that whole sweep, Brock pulls out some core themes, key takeaways that I think resonate way beyond just
Yeah,
chemistry.
let's talk about those big messages. The first one seems really foundational. The evolution from craft to science.
Absolutely. Brock makes it crystal clear. If you want any field, whether it's chemistry back then or maybe running a business today, to move from being an art or a craft to a real discipline,
You need numbers.
you need quantitative methods, you need measurement. And you need standardized language, nomenclature. You simply can't improve or professionalize what you can't reliably measure and consistently name.
That makes perfect sense. The second big theme.
The interplay between theory and practice, that constant feedback loop, we saw it again and again. A theoretical breakthrough, like understanding molecular structure.
Immediately leads to practical things like new dyes or drugs.
Right. But it also worked the other way. The practical need for, say, better explosive or more effective fertilizers often drove the fundamental research questions. It's a two-way street, essential for innovation.
It's not just ideas floating in space, they connect to real-world problems.
Exactly. And the third theme Brock really emphasizes is the collaborative nature of scientific progress.
It wasn't just lone geniuses in labs.
No. He argues very strongly that none of these major leaps happened in isolation. Progress needed communities. It needed debate, consensus building, peer review.
The journals, the societies we mentioned earlier.
Yes, those networks were crucial. Shared labs, conferences, it required social infrastructure. And that lesson applies directly to how we work today, right? Silos kill innovation in any modern team or organization.
True collaboration is key. Okay, Brock's book is also apparently full of really memorable lines that kind of sum up big ideas.
It is. He has a way of crystallizing complex history into these really insightful sentences.
Let's hear a few.
Okay, first one. Chemistry is the science of transformation, and its history is the story of how humanity learned to understand and control the transformations of matter.
Oh, I like that. It connects the science bit, understanding, directly with the practical bit, control. It's about human agency changing the world.
Captures that core duality. Okay, second one. The chemical revolution was not merely the replacement of one theory by another, but the establishment of chemistry as a quantitative science based on measurement and mathematical relationships.
Right, that reinforces what we talked about with Lavoisier. A real scientific revolution isn't just swapping ideas, it's changing the rules of the game, changing the methodology, what counts as proof.
Exactly. It's about how you know. And one more. Modern chemistry emerged not from the work of isolated geniuses, but from the collaborative efforts of communities of
And
researchers.
the social support systems that sustain them.
Yes, it's that crucial reminder that science isn't just about brilliant minds, it's also a social and institutional achievement. You need the whole ecosystem.
So, thinking about all this history, phlogiston, urea synthesis, periodic tables, how does this help us, today? What are the real-life applications?
Well, I think Brock's historical view gives us a great lens for understanding scientific progress and evaluating information right now.
How so?
Think about Lavoisier demanding that super accurate balance. When you hear claims today, maybe about a new diet fad, a medical study, even climate science, you can apply that historical filter.
Right.
Ask, is this based on solid, quantitative, verifiable evidence?
Is it established knowledge or still just speculation?
Precisely. Demand the data, just like Lavoisier did. It helps you distinguish between hype and actual rigorous science.
That's a really practical way to think about it, moving beyond just agreeing or disagreeing into asking how we know this.
Yeah. And the institutional side offers lessons for collaboration and innovation today.
Like the chemical societies back then.
Exactly. The need for structures that support sharing knowledge, testing ideas, building consensus, that's just as vital for a modern tech company's R&D team or a research group as it was for 19th century chemists. You need those platforms.
Good communication, shared standards. It all comes back to that.
And finally, there's the historical context for environmental issues.
Ah, because the history of chemistry is largely the history of industrialization, too.
It is. Understanding how industrial chemistry developed the relentless push for cheaper materials, more powerful fertilizers, new plastics that gives us the essential background to understand today's challenges.
Like sustainability, pollution.
Yeah. To participate knowledgeably in discussions about environmental policy and regulation, you need to understand the historical roots of the industries and technologies involved. You see where our modern dependencies and problems originated.
That adds a really valuable layer to those often complex debates. Okay, final thoughts. What was the most surprising or valuable thing you took away from Brock's history?
For me, it's the sheer cumulative power of it all. How knowledge builds, layer upon layer. Brock shows science isn't static. It's this incredibly dynamic process of investigation. Chemistry is never finished. It's always refining itself, extending itself, standing on the shoulders of previous work. It's quite awe-inspiring, really.
That's a great point. For me, I think it was a reinforcement that progress isn't just about brilliant individuals. It's a societal achievement, too. You need the Lavoisier or the Mendeleev, sure, but you also need the institutions, the shared language, the better tools, even just the cultural willingness to accept new ideas. The whole history of chemistry feels like this massive, collective human project that literally reshaped our world.
It absolutely did, a profound transformation.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.